Discussions with Ajahn Chin at the Buddhist Cultural Center, Colombo, October 2015. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Nina, Sarah, John, Kevin Fong, Rajan, June, Venerable Vimala Jyoti, Venerable Ratanananda, and Venerable Arya Jyoti.
Firstly, for our local scholars, we have some of my teachers and PhD students and Buddhist studies students from my university, Kelaniya University, and from Piradeniya University. We have some friends, just Buddhist friends. We have Venerable Vimala Jyoti, the head of the Buddhist Cultural Center, and he has been a great support to this event. Yesterday I came here, it was an empty floor, and today everything has been set up professionally, and he actually organized some really good audio system for us. So we would like to thank you so much for your kind support. Secondly, I would like to introduce our guest from overseas, and the distinguished guest, two speakers today, Ajahn Chin, my teacher. I've been with her for 3 years. Since the first time I met her, I knew that from this peaceful soul, I would learn a lot. And until today, I'm still trying my best to ponder every word that she teaches. The next person I would like to introduce is respected scholar, Buddhist scholar, Nina Van Gogh, who authored various books on Buddhism and Abhidharma, and well known in the Western Buddhist world. And Nina and Ajahn are accompanied by two other students, Madam Sarah Abbott and Jonathan Abbott, who is now want to work as a technician instead of an assistant. Okay. Before we come here, we have lots of doubts about the outcome of this event, because most of us, we study a lot from the text and from secondary sources, and some of us are doing researches in Abhidharma and Buddhism. And then we have very high expectations, because we've read, some of us have read Nina's books, and some of us have read Ajahn's book, and we would like to really come in person today to clear out doubts. So a really heavy expectation on the speakers, and there will be lots of different views. Basically, the meaning of inquiry of knowledge is we always have to challenge ourselves and finding different ways to interpret. We should not be bound even by the literal understanding of the Buddha's words as he taught in Kalama Suttas. So that's why we are here to try to experience the Dhamma by ourselves, and see how we can grasp the meaning of the Buddha's words with the help of the elders, with the learned students and teachers. So be ready for lots of interesting conversations and discussions.
Ajahn said to me the other day in our previous personal discussion that the numbers doesn't matter. It's how we really experience Dhammas as they are. But it seems to be very easy to say that. But when we really do so, would there be any use of the Abhidhamma if we know the numbers, we do the math? Does it have any usage at all? So my question is, please start today's discussion of elaborating what Dhammas are. Secondly, would Abhidhamma's math exercises got any use of contributing to our enlightenment or not? Thank you.
In the time of Buddha, anyone who went to see him just asked about reality which at that moment appearing, because who knows about the truth of whatever appears now. So when we think about the word Dhamma, we think of something that we have to read, but actually it's whatever appears now is that Buddha had enlightened the truth. That's why when people went to see the Buddha, Buddha just ask them about whatever appears, whether seeing now is real. So this can be the answer for people at any time. Seeing is real. Who can make it arise? No one at all. But instantly, because hearing is not seeing, and thinking is not hearing or seeing. About any word which does not condition right understanding, that is not the word of the Buddha. For example, now just talk about seeing. It's in Abhidhamma and Suttanta and also in Vinaya about seeing pleasant things. So all dhammas are not self at all. That's why we can see that the Buddhists are comprised with the monk and female monk in the Buddha's time, but not today's, and upasaka and upasika, which means those who are close to him to listen, to understand, to study his word, and to have the right understanding of what he taught. So I think that the words or language is not as important as the meaning or the true nature of reality at all, no matter in what word. So is there anything about Dhamma, Paramada Dhamma, and Abhidhamma? Seeing is Dhamma. Seeing is Paramada Dhamma. And seeing is Abhidhamma. So all Dhammas are Paramada Dhamma and Abhidhamma. So nobody here at all, only Paramada Dhamma.
And in the beginning, Fong, you were mentioning doubts, like we may have doubt how the weather will be or what the traffic situation will be like, whether we will arrive on time, how many people will come. But when we talk about doubt, vichikicca, we're talking about doubt about the truth at this moment, like now Ajahn is talking about seeing now as anatta. Is there any doubt at this moment that it is seeing which arises for a moment by conditions, no one who can see, no one who can do anything, and falls away instantly? And at this moment of seeing, only visible object is experienced. So no matter what number, or whether we're talking about Rupa Khanda or Ayatana or Dhatu, it is just that visible object that is seen at this moment. No one there, nothing there, no world of traffic, no bottle of waters, just that which is seen for an instant and fallen away. So the only way that doubt is ever eradicated is through the development of understanding, as Ajahn was referring to, beginning with Pariyatti, the firm intellectual understanding about realities now at this moment, as anatta, and this will lead to patipatti, the direct understanding of those realities, leading to patibheda. And this is the way that sadda, confidence in the Buddha's teachings, develops through the development of understanding.
And just finally, regarding your second point about the value of the Abhidhamma, when in fact Dhammas have to be known by Panya, when Panya is developed, Dhammas will be known. But of course, first of all, one has to hear about Dhammas. There could never be the understanding development, the beginning of development of understanding of Dhammas, unless one heard about it. And that is the feature of the teachings that the Buddha emphasized continually. So the great value of the Abhidhamma is that it not only mentions Dhammas, but it explains them in so many different ways. And so the Dhamma has to be heard before understanding can begin to develop.
And some people wonder about science. Science also analyzes physical phenomena. And what is then the difference? Well, the purpose of science is not at all detachment from the idea of self. But the Buddha spoke about the four great elements, like earth, water, fire, and wind. But actually, there are phenomena that can be experienced now in daily life in order to see them as only conditioned Dhamma and not something and not a person. This all leads to detachment from the self, and that is the great difference. And then Kevin mentioned the Kalama Sutta, that we all should investigate for ourselves. And that is also the Buddha's teaching. The Buddha taught us in such a way that understanding can be developed, our own understanding, and we don't have to follow anybody or any teaching, but just understand more. But very gradually, it takes a long, long time for understanding to grow, and it is not self who understands, but Panya Chetasika, a Dhamma which can develop by listening and considering.
I would like to invite questions from the audience. Bhante, on this side, would you like to pose questions? And sisters, venerable. Doctor, yeah. Yes, doctor.
Thank you. I must confess I have a very poor knowledge of Abhidhamma, really. I'm just a beginner, like trying to make some sense of what I read. Now, Ajahn said that this was preached by the Buddha, Abhidhamma. And also, you brought out the question, the word vichikicca, the doubt. But there is a considerable amount of doubt whether this Abhidhamma was really preached by the Buddha. Now, if it's okay with you all, I would like to quote a small short passage from a book by Edward Conze. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. And he says that as a result of the emergence of for the interest in philosophical questions, we have the first instance of a whole class of canonical literatures being created to make a new situation, to meet a new situation. The Abhidhamma books are clearly composed after the third division of the schools. The contents of the seven Abhidhamma books of the Sarvastivadins differ greatly from the seven books of the Theravadins, who are all an object of Vibhajavadins. So there is some doubt Of course, it's not very, not a very important thing, because Abhidhamma is a wonderful analysis of both of the Dhamma, both an analysis and a synthesis of the Dhamma. But I feel that before we embark on study of Abhidhamma, we should have a good grounding in the suttas, because there's a fair considerable amount of Abhidhamma in the suttas themselves. So I think before we embark on the study of Abhidhamma, we should really have a very good grounding in the suttas. That's my observation. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor.
I think that if you don't mind the book, but we mind about whatever appears now, and we can see that how can we get the understanding, no matter from what book. But whenever there is seeing, there is no understanding of seeing at all. What word can help us to listen with carefully and consider it carefully about whether it's I who see, or it's just a reality which sees? And this conforms with all the teachings of the book, of the word of the Buddha, in any book, not only this book, this particular one, or that particular one, but what is taught about seeing right now. Can it bring the understanding of seeing is not self? Because the teachings of the Buddha all concern anattaness. All reality is seeing right now is not self. It's better rather than try to open the book and find out that this book teach about seeing this way and the other book in the other manner. I think that we can listen and think about it even right now, because there is seeing right now. So instead of thinking of other thing while seeing is not known, can there be time to understand it rather than thinking about that which does not appear now?
I agree with Nina Gurkhan that you said that though the signs, they can show up the things, but it's not a detachment. But the things now is here, the people, majority of the people, they support what they see. For example, as I'm, and mostly we are here monks, we are academic students. In the case of academy, to discuss about the Abhidhamma, we are really in difficult task. For example, I myself trying to do some research about the Rupa Kalpa, so I cannot quote it, how to see the Rupa Kalpa. Then, even though that there is a theory which can be experienced, how to see the atom, the tiny matter of our body, but it cannot be quoted from the text. So in this sense, how can I approach, how can I apply this theory, how to see the atom by the academic way, for the academic purpose?
It all depends on detachment, whether it leads to detachment from the self. That is the real purpose of the Buddha's teaching. So Ajahn speaks a lot about seeing now. And I find that I can never hear enough of it, because the development of understanding is by hearing and considering. And it is so slow, it takes many lives before we really understand that there is no self. And seeing only sees what is visible. It doesn't see people or things, because the notion of person or different things like the bottles here and the table comes later when there is thinking, the citta which thinks, because in reality there are only citta, cetasika, rupa and nibbana, but we cannot experience that now. So we speak all the time now about citta, cetasika and rupa. So no matter what academical study, that is a different field. We cannot compare it with the Buddha's teachings. It's not denied. It is its own field, its own way of looking at things. It's not bad. It's not said like that. But it is the conventional world, the world of Sammuti Satya. But the Buddha taught about Paramatta Satya, because we all know Sammuti Satya, and we don't need to be taught about persons and things and all the things in the world, but we forget about Paramatta Satya, which is really true now and also falls away immediately, because when we think of seeing, it seems that seeing stays, that there is seeing all the time, but in fact it falls away. But it takes so long to realize that by vipassana jnana, inside knowledge. So we first have to know that there are mental phenomena or nama and physical phenomena, rupa, and that they are conditioned by different conditions in different ways.
And I think that there's a similarity in both the questions when we, like Ajahn and Nino, are both talking about when there is more understanding of reality now, like seeing visible object which is impinged on eye sense. Actually, we find we can read about it in suttas, like all the Samyutta Nikaya suttas are about these realities. And in the Abhidhamma Pitaka, it gives more details, because then one may realize that visible object, why is visible, each visible object different? Each one is khanda, each one arises and falls away. Why is there thinking one moment about water bottle and another moment about people? Because the visible objects seen at each moment are not the same. Each visible object must arise in a group, in a kalapa, so it's conditioned by the other minimum seven rupas that arise together with it. And so from beginning to understand a little bit about visible object, then one is interested to understand more about the details about visible object appearing now. And we find in the Abhidhamma Pitaka more and more details about how each visible object is conditioned by the four primaries and the other rupas, and as a result of this, the sanya is marking at each moment, and this conditions thinking in different ways, thinking about an impression, a water bottle, and so on. But it all begins with what appears at this moment. If we divorce our academic study from reality, which can be understood now, then it becomes a pure academic study, not the Buddha's teaching, which is always about this moment. Some people think that pariyatti is about memorizing numbers and details, as Kevin mentioned, but actually pariyatti is about the intellectual understanding about the reality which appears now. And this is the only way that confidence will develop. So then no doubt that what we read in the Abhidhamma is the Buddha's teaching, the omniscience of the Buddha and his great followers who shared it. And we find that whatever we read in the sutta is in conformity with what we read in Abhidhamma and Vinaya and the ancient commentaries. And of course other people will question or follow science or Savastivada or this. It doesn't matter at all, because the teachings come back to the development of understanding at this moment. And it's not a matter of trying to see kalapas, for example. In the beginning, if there's no understanding of visible object that appears now or sound that appears now, how can there be the developed understanding which directly understands the arising and falling away of those dhammas or the kalapa? So the understanding has to develop otherwise it will just be thinking about some details with doubt.
And I'd just like to add a word or two on the suggestion by the good doctor there, I think, that before one takes an interest in the Abhidhamma, one should have a good grounding in the suttas. I think there's no rule about which part of the teachings can be of interest to a person, because different people have different tendencies and accumulations and ways of approaching something. So for some people, the bare statements of the Abhidhamma are appealing and they are inclined to study further. Others, like the narrative kind of statements found in the suttas. But I think more to the point, knowledge of the Abhidhamma is necessary in order to have a proper understanding of the suttas, because it's easy to read the suttas and to get an idea. For example, in the Satipatthana Sutta, and it talks about a monk going backwards and going forwards, has clear comprehension. It's not immediately apparent that what is being referred to there is an understanding of Dhammas. And people may read that and get the idea that there's supposed to be, for example, mindfulness of walking or mindfulness of postures. But if we have a knowledge of the Abhidhamma, we know that really what the Buddha was talking about was the Dhammas that are arising at the present moment and the development of understanding of those. But that is the object of the understanding that is being developed. And so that kind of information is helpful in reading the suttas properly. So, no rule.
But the suttas themselves contain a lot of Abhidhamma.
Of course they do. And it doesn't matter whether one learns about Dhammas from the suttas or from the Abhidhamma. But you are quite correct, there's a large overlap, and that is only to be expected. But the fact that we even make that comment is a bit telling, because for many people, not yourself, the two are separate disciplines, as it were. But we understand that the two are talking about exactly the same thing, and that is why knowledge of one is helpful for understanding the other.
First, I want to say thank you very much for Nina Beckham's your book. That I finished reading those books in a month, and that's, you get me to see beyond text to see the possibility of reality of the books you're describing. So I'm very grateful for your writing. My question is somewhat related to Venerable's question. I studied psychology before. I'm very interested in mental phenomena, and Abhidhamma is exactly describing it. So my question is, if it is the reality, I'm using if because I have an experience, so I have to be unspeculative. If it is describing the reality of the mental phenomena, then it should apply to the phenomena as observed and studied in Western psychology as well. For instance, some behavior experiments, which the Western psychology deny the participation of the mind, but there must be a mental part of the test subjects. So my question is, can or cannot the knowledge of chittasikas, vittis, be applied to as alternative explanations of such mental phenomena? And if they can, at what level can we conjunct this both and make Abhidhamma and additional theories to study human behaviors?
My background is in psychology also, so I understand your interest and approach. When I started studying Abhidhamma, because many topics seemed to overlap, for example, we were talking about memory, Sanya and Vedana feeling, but at a certain point I found it was more helpful to look at the Abhidhamma afresh instead of trying to relate it, because it is so very precise and some of the premises with which we start are different. For example, we learn about how now there is one cheetah following another cheetah without end. And the first cheetah of this life, Patisanti cheetah, followed Chuti cheetah of last life. So when it comes to understanding accumulations and behavior, we understand that those accumulations have been developing countless lifetimes. Why one baby has a lot of attachment to one object and another, and a lot of attachment to another object. From a Dharma point of view, even there are identical twins, for example, very easy to understand because there are different tendencies, different accumulations. Nothing is lost from life to life. At each moment, sanya perception is marking its object. And if we read about experiments, it's still interesting to me. But from a Dharma point of view, it's not difficult to explain, because actually what we think about as certain kinds of behavior or certain kinds of mental states, we know from our Dharma studies actually there are just cheetahs, chetasikas and rupas arising and falling away. There's no person there, there's no behavior as we understand it conventionally. This is like an idea we have, like now we're all sitting in the room discussing Dharma and this is our behavior. But actually at this moment there are moments of the cheetahs, moments of seeing, moments of hearing, thinking with understanding, thinking with doubt, thinking with attachment, thinking with aversion. Many different mental states are rising and falling away, and each one is conditioned at each moment from, as a result of many different conditions, particularly paktupanisya pachya, decisive support condition, when we're talking about the accumulation now of liking or disliking. And it is that cheetah of liking or disliking, for example, that conditions behavior, or the cheetah with wise consideration that may condition speech or asking a good question. So we learn that the speech or the deeds are all conditioned by cheetahs that have been conditioned in various ways by accumulations. So for me, what I find helpful is applying what I understand from the Dharma back to, like, what I read about in psychological studies. But I don't try to equate the same, like if we're talking about Vedana, feeling, for example. We learn from our Dharma studies, actually there is Vedana arising at each moment, and it's so brief, it arises and falls away. So it's different from a conventional idea of feeling, and sanya at each moment now, it's marking its object, nothing ever lost. Again, different from a conventional idea of memory. Like conventionally we might think when we grow old, oh, we begin to lose our memory. But from our Dharma study, we know that even when it seems we're forgetful or our memory is lost, sanya is still marking its object at every moment. So for me, the Abhidharma or the Dharma, Abhidharma, as Ajahn said, really just means subtle Dharma. It's so deep and it can be applied to any time or occasion or study.
And I think the difficulty you face in trying to find a common ground between psychology and the Dhamma is that psychology is attempting to analyze the conventional mind, or even, not even that, perhaps conventional behavior. Whereas the Dhamma is talking about absolute Dhammas by direct experience. The difference here is what Sarah might have referred to as premises, because the approach of psychology is not one of direct experience of whatever is real at the present moment. So the conventional mind can we say there's no meeting point between the conventional mind and citta? It's like trying to find a meeting point between another branch of science like molecular science and rupas, for example. No matter how far down you drill, they are never going to conjoin.
So you don't think it's possible just to merge at any point? Or at, not merge, but cross paths at any junctures?
Well, it's just an idea anyway, isn't it, really? Because there's no actual crossing paths, but put it this way. A person who understands the Dhamma can explain conventional psychology in Dhamma terms. A person who understands psychology but not the Dhamma could never explain the two together.
And I think the other point that one has to remember, as Ajahn was stressing, is whatever we read in the teachings, whether in the suttas, the Abhidhamma, the Vinaya, the commentaries, whatever language, the purpose of the teachings is to understand reality now as anatta, as not self. And no one but the Buddha, no scientific study, no psychological theory can penetrate the understanding of dharmas as anatta, except the Buddha. So it's through the Buddha's teachings that we understand more about Dharma now as anatta, and this is the way that detachment develops from what appears now. So the goal of the Buddha's teachings is different, because the goal is to understand dharmas as anatta and develop detachment from what appears now. Because seeing now, it arises, it falls away instantly. It's so useless to be attached to it. It's just a conditioned dharma. No one can control it. No one can make it another way. No one can make it arise. No matter what experiments or what behavior is done or anything else, no one can make seeing arise, because seeing arises now as a result of karma. And this, so the kind of core or the essence of the Buddha's teaching will not be proved by scientific theory, like seeing now as a result of karma. But if there isn't the understanding how seeing now is a result different from attachment, which arises immediately, then there won't be the deeper understanding of the Buddha's teachings. But I admire your interest in applying what you've learned from the Buddha's teachings to other fields. I think whatever we learn from the Buddha's teachings will help us when we talk to people of other disciplines or work in other fields.
Questions, please? From this side. Thank you.
Sorry. You know, something that really intrigued me is this question of memory. How do you reconcile that with the impermanence, transitory nature of everything? Now, could you expand a little bit? You started talking about it, but it's very confusing because everything is transient. How can there be memory?
Is there memory right now? Is there memory right now?
A question for everybody wants to answer. Is there any memory right now?
Well, I say there is memory because I remember so many things, but how do you explain it? How do you reconcile it with the transitory nature of things?
If memory does not arise, can there be memory?
Yes. How can you have a storehouse if nothing very permanent?
If memory does not arise, can there be memory?
often say that if there is no memory, we will not be able to exist properly, right?
If seeing does not arise, can there be seeing? If hearing now does not arise, can there be hearing?
No, you can't. But if there is no memory, it's impossible to really get it.
At moment of seeing, memory of sanya cittasika arises with seeing, not to sound, no other thing. That's why after seeing, there can be the memory of that which is seen. Memory arises and falls away together with citta, because cittasikas arise with citta. Each cittasika cannot arise alone. So at moment of remember what's what, that's not I. It's only a reality, not citta, because citta is the faculty of experiencing only. Citta itself does not remember, but a reality which is not citta but arises with citta. Each moment of citta remember or marks the object, and that is real because it's a reality, no one at all. Sanya arises, falls away. Memory arises and falls away all the time, together with citta and cittasikas.
I think your question is also like, now why is there remembering that this is a water bottle and not a cup of tea, for example? Because the memory that arises at a moment of thinking now, it falls away completely, never to arise again. But that tendency, that habit, that thinking in a particular way, remembering particular objects, is not lost, it is accumulated in the citta. Some people may refer to it as storehouse, but that can give the suggestion of something like a depot where things are kept. Actually, there's no depot like a bus depot or anything where things are kept, but each tendency, each memory of an idea is not lost, it is accumulated in the citta. So later, tomorrow, when there is thinking in a similar way, it remembers, like I will remember later, you are the doctor and someone else is the venerable, because there's been the hearing of the sound and the thinking about doctor, there's been the introduction, so that memory at each moment, it conditions memory in the future. This is how we're able to communicate in speech. And I mentioned a bit earlier that each conditioned dharma arises because of many conditions. And one condition we're also familiar with is karma, like seeing arises now as a result of karma. But thinking in particular ways, remembering certain ways, the main condition is Paktu Pranasyapachya, natural decisive support condition. And this is how habits are accumulated from moment to moment, even though at each moment of sanya it falls away completely. This is why the Abhidharma is so interesting, because it explains or helps us to understand every moment of life, every moment as being conditioned, not someone who can decide to remember this object or that, or who can choose to think in a certain way, but we understand there are just different dharmas that are conditioned by various paccaya.
I don't want to sound cynical, but it may not matter how memory works. If the Buddha didn't explain it, then it's not something that needs to be known. But we are told there is the mental factor of memory. And we all know from our own experience that memory works, but the nuts and bolts and how and why, there's lots of things that weren't explained by the Buddha, right? You know the simile of a handful of leaves in the forest. What's important is what can be directly understood. And most people, if they hadn't heard the Dhamma, would not think that memory can be the object of
direct experience or understanding, but it is in the teachings as a mental factor. It is one of the five khandhas, and its role is obviously an important one. So if it appears to awareness and understanding, it can be at that moment understood. Sometimes we forget that the important thing that's being taught in the Dhamma is the understanding of Dhammas that are appearing at the present moment.
Questions?
Yeah, actually, with doctor questions, again I would like to ask, for example, our laptop, we have a memory. If we need to get some data, we exactly go to the point and take it. Then, for example, today we are discussing, for tomorrow is going to be memory. Like yesterday I was at Paradinya, which is now memory. Then how is coming on? And where is exactly existing? Is in brain or somewhere else? This one, I think, exactly he would like to, I think like this.
Yes.
Question is how memory works, how we can remember things that happened in the past and recall it for use.
Are tendencies like liking and disliking accumulated?
The question is, let's say that you like something, does it last, does it accumulate? Like if you like to drink...
I like or I dislike, whatever. I'm recollecting the memory. That recollecting object, how is coming to me? From where? Where is the my memory is existing
yes,
or storing?
First of all, before we get to that, yesterday, what do you like today? You also liked yesterday.
Something.
So your favorite color or taste or whatever, right?
Okay.
So how is that? Why is it that what you like today is what you liked yesterday?
Yeah, like and dislike that point, time to time is changing. But with his question, my question also. For example, I was at Paradinya yesterday, which is today's memory.
Yes.
And today I'm recollecting again. Then the recollecting that data, where is existing?
Right.
Like in the laptop. If we have some data, directly we go to that folder and we can copy. So we know where is that data is existing in the laptop. How, similar way in our, in Chitta Chedishka or whatever you say, where is that data is existing in our film?
And where is existing the liking?
Yeah, liking.
My question.
You can say liking.
Yes, that's my question.
Yes.
Where is existing the liking?
Yes.
Right. Is it the same?
Yeah.
Right.
Jonathan tried to explain it in a counter question to you.
Yeah.
Let's say you like something, and can you explain how does that liking last or accumulate? Like you like pink color, and now this is what I like.
Okay,
how does
it
carry?
Yeah. I will say it's my mentality.
And his memory mentality.
I can't say exactly what it is.
They
have something.
I think the human beings are the most fortunate living being in this universe. And they have this mind to think and plan. So if you want to understand certain things about all this energy system and the Rupa Kaya, you have to go on eradicating certain defilements. If while you are having all those defilements, you are never able to see things as it is.
Yes, it's true.
So only thing through eradicating, if you can eradicate anger, jealousy, grudge and all these things, at least at the first stage, through meditation, you can see more things when you are reached at that time.
Also, the Buddha taught in the suttas and the Abhidhamma everywhere that what one dwells upon, what one thinks a lot about, leads to
more dwelling, more thinking about. So now if there's thinking with attachment, it leads to conditions more thinking with attachment, because that tendency grows. And in the same way, like now we're considering about the truth of reality at this moment, the considering now, the little bit of understanding at this moment about reality conditions more considering, more understanding about reality. If there's a lot of anger, the hindrance that Bande mentioned, that anger conditions more anger. So thinking wisely at this moment, from it falls away immediately, it's gone, it's completely impermanent, but that tendency accumulates, it conditions more such wise consideration in the future. Now we know that's only citta, cetasika and rupa. When we have an idea of brain or storehouse, or these are conventional ideas, in reality there are only 28 rupas, no brain rupa. So nothing, when we say it's stored in the brain or in a store box or something, this is just a kind of conventional kind of explanation. Actually, that tendency, the thinking in a certain way or liking in a certain way, is accumulated in the citta. Like at the moment of seeing, there is no thinking about the Dharma, but at that moment that tendency is accumulated from moment to moment, so it's never lost.
Can you say memory is just concept?
When we talk about memory in psychological or conventional sense, it is a concept. Like I can remember the color of the bottle, or I can remember that I stay at Peridinia. It's this kind of memory is a concept. So the Dharma, the Buddha's teaching, and especially the subtle Dharma that Jan was referring to, is to understand Paramatta Dharmas, those Dharmas that have their own particular characteristic that cannot be changed. And this is the way that we understand the clear distinction between what is real and what is concept. Otherwise, like normal, we live in a world of concepts. Like it's nighttime when we're sleeping and dreaming. We know when we wake up it was a dream world, fantasy world. But even when we're awake, most of the time, we're lost in the stories. Stories about the pink water bottle, or how I live in Peridinia, or the storehouse of the brain. And at those moments, no understanding of reality, Paramatta Dharma, such as seeing or visible object. So this is why Ajahn started off talking about seeing and visible object, because it's only by understanding reality, Paramatta Dharma now, then the clear distinction between reality and concept can be known, and doubts can be eradicated, and then gradually no more question about how can it be stored, how can it be remembered, because one understands that each Dharma now, each reality, has to arise by particular conditions and fall away. No one who can do it, no place it can be stored.
So is sanya memory itself concept or reality? Sanya, memory itself, is it concept or a reality?
For my little understanding, I think it's just concept. With my little understanding, I think it's like
sanya is a cetasika, right?
Yes.
So it's not concept, but it can mark concept. But sanya itself is not concept.
Because we know that each citta, like seeing or hearing or thinking, has to arise with seven cetasikas, seven mental factors or more. And one of those is sanya, So it's a reality, a mental factor that has to arise at each moment and mark and remember its object. So it's real. If there was no sanya, nothing could be thought about, nothing could be remembered. But different from the conventional idea of memory.
So it is reality, and we can explain as a dynamic way of liking or disliking. In Abhidhamma explanation, is it possible? So it means a more functional, it's difficult to grab, you know, as a reality. So we are normally student thinking about, like him, we accepted this is kind of a concept, but really difficult to understand.
So let's talk a little bit more about realities, mm-hmm. and then we will understand that anything that's not reality is a concept. Mm-hmm. So there are two kinds of realities. There are those realities that can experience an object. Mm-hmm. We call them namas. Mm-hmm. And namas can be either chittas, moments of consciousness, mm-hmm. or chetasikas, mental factors. Mm-hmm. So at each moment of life, there is a chitta accompanied by various mental factors. Mm-hmm. These are realities. Seeing now is a reality. It's accompanied by mental factors such as sanya, memory, and feeling, vedana, and so on. These are all realities. And then there are those realities that cannot experience anything at all. The rupas that you are interested in studying. So hardness is touch now. It's a rupa. It cannot experience anything, it cannot know anything, it doesn't know it's experienced. Visible object, that which is seen, is a rupa, mm-hmm. a reality that doesn't experience anything. So there are just these various namas and rupas, chittas, chetasikas, mm-hmm. and rupas. Each one arises by conditions and falls away instantly. Mm-hmm. And anything other than chittas, chetasikas, and rupas is a concept, an idea.
Thank you.
And the Buddha's teaching is not to understand concepts. Science and psychology and conventional thinking is expert at. We teach babies about concepts from the word go. We don't need a Buddha's teaching for that. The Buddha's teaching is to understand realities, paramatta dhammas.
And may I? So I've heard an explanation regarding a memory before, and I just want to offer here for more discussion, see if that makes sense. The explanationist says, anything that avacitta have experienced before, heard, tasted, seen, can, when the conditions are mature, cause the bhavanga to vibrate. The experience itself become an object of the rising citta. So the memory, in a sense, becomes the concept or the object of the new arising citta, which make you to rethink or re-experience or recollect what has happened before. What do you think of this explanation?
Did you hear it catch it
all? I'll just try and summarize what you're saying to see if we understand it. You're saying that, according to some people, a memory causes the bhavanga jitta to vibrate, and it is then experienced by the consciousness as a recollection. Is that what you're saying?
Not exactly the memory itself caused the bhavanga to vibrate, but the experience, whatever the object that has been experienced before, when the condition is mature enough to cause the bhavanga to vibrate and become the object of the new arising citta.
Could you give an example?
The water bottle. I saw that before. I recognized it as a water bottle
right.
at that moment. And when that condition, which means my eye senses meet this object again, that experience of it as a water bottle becomes the new object of the object of new arising citta, and therefore I recollect it as water bottle.
But one thing you have to remember is the Bhavanga cittas actually exactly the same kind of citta as the birth consciousness and the death consciousness of that life, and the object of those Bhavanga cittas, birth consciousness and death consciousness, the same. It's the same object, completely unknown. These cittas are vipaka, they are result. So they are result of the last karma in life, the last kusala or akusala cittas before death in the previous life have conditioned those Bhavanga cittas to experience this unknown object, not known in this life. So it's not the object of the new citta or the cittas that have just fallen away. The Bhavanga cittas don't arise in a sense door or mind door process, and each Bhavanga citta is the same when it refers to, like, the vibrating one. It just means it's referring to the last Bhavanga cittas before the eye door process or mind door process begins, and the cittas of the eye door process, which follows the Bhavanga cittas. Each of those cittas has its own particular condition. For example, when seeing consciousness arises, the condition for seeing consciousness is nothing to do with the Bhavanga cittas. The condition for seeing consciousness is visible object, which is impinged on the eye sense, and because of past karma, conditions to see that visible object.
Right, I think the vibration of Bhavanga is mentioned here as the beginning of new VT.
Of the VT.
Right. So a new VT process starts.
Because it's the last citta before the VT begins. The ones just before the idol process. Because the Bhavanga cittas don't experience the object in a process.
At the beginning, I heard someone say that the paramattha is someone reality and cannot change. I feel like it's lasting forever. So can we make a distinction between that? I mean, paramattha is something cannot change, the truth. So, and the lasting forever is something like it's not another, like, wrong view, something like that. So can we have a distinction between them? Yeah.
Actually, it's an important point to clarify, because having a characteristic that can't be changed doesn't mean that dharma lasts forever. If we talk about the characteristic of sanya, for example, that dharma that marks and remembers the object, by saying it's a paramattha dharma, having a characteristic that can't be changed, it means sanya can't be vedana, it can't be citta, it can't be anything else, and it cannot be reduced further. So it has its absolute characteristic that is unalterable, but that doesn't mean it doesn't arise and fall away instantly.
And can anyone change the characteristic of sanya, which has arisen? Now, sanya arises. Can anyone change its characteristic? Everything now has arisen. No one can change any reality's characteristic at all.
Okay, according to the Buddha, everything is anicca. Then how come this paramattha dhamma, does he say, not changing?
I mean that no one can change the characteristic of a reality. Seeing cannot be hearing, but seeing arises by conditions, and hearing arises by conditions. And what? Who can do now? Seeing has arisen. It's gone. hearing arises, it hears, and then it passes away in split seconds. What can anyone do? Because actually there's no one at all, only realities or dhammas are anatta. No people, no things. Because if there's no dhammas at all, how can we take seeing as I, or dog seeing, or deva seeing? Seeing is seeing.
Yeah, even the seeing, it itself is impermanent. Now I could see you, the momentarily is you are not there. So that is also impermanent. Then how can be this, the Paramattha Dhamma, permanent?
That seeing is Paramattha Dhamma, right?
Yes, yeah, seeing is the reality. I could see you, it's a reality.
So we begin from seeing is real. It's a Paramattha Dhamma.
Yes.
It's conditioned.
Yes.
Otherwise it cannot arise. All conditioned realities arise and falls away. Anicchang, Dukkhang, Anatta. Three characteristics of all conditioned realities.
So can't we say that this Paramattha Dhamma also anicca?
If we don't call it seeing, it sees and then it falls away. No matter we call it Paramattha Dhamma or Dhamma, permanent, the word or not, but it just arises and falls away in split seconds.
So unalterable just means it cannot be changed. No one can make sanya that arises now, a different sanya, a different reality. No one can choose what it will mark and remember. Like a few moments ago you were thinking about Peridinia. Maybe next moment you'd like to, but thinking thinks of something different. No one can change the reality of sanya or vedana or anything else. It has to be the way it is conditioned, that's all. But it lasts for an instant and falls away immediately.
And also, when we talk about unalterable characteristic, we mean that the characteristic of visible object today is the same as was the characteristic of visible object yesterday. The characteristic of the visible object experienced by one individual is exactly the same as the characteristic of the visible object experienced by another individual. So this is, it doesn't deny the momentariness of dhammas, but it explains that all dhammas of the same kind have the same characteristic. And that's why the Buddha was able to teach then for now. Because the truth about dhammas applies equally now as it did in the time of the Buddha.
If anyone would say seeing is permanent, do you believe?
No. Immediately it's gone.
Right.
Immediately it's gone.
Yeah.
And when seeing arises, if anyone says it can be stopped or it can be changed or it can be suppressed or made into hearing, is it possible?
I don't think so.
No, because anatta.
Yes.
Venerable Vimala Jyoti, you mentioned to the other monk about the klesa and meditation. Maybe it's good to discuss what we mean by klesa and eradicating klesa, and what we mean by meditation and bhavana, because maybe different ideas, if you would like to share a little more.
Well, in our previous lives, we know according to the teachings, and we have accumulated a lot of good karmas and bad karmas. So we do not know where actually where these things are stored. That's why this venerable also has a doubt. According to my understanding, only thing, first thing is we must have great confidence about Buddha and his teaching. With that faith, so accepting the teachings, so only method is by realizing this anicca, dukkha and anatta, we have to meditate. One day meditation, there are methods, or of course samatha and vipassana methods already is there. So through vipassana meditation, if you able to understand, there is no I and me is actually the illusion. Finally, we will be able to realize. So through eradication of all the defilements, so there will be no rebirth, no continuity. So for that purpose only, through understanding only, through by realizing only, we can meditate and eradicate all those defilements and achieve our final goal by eradicating complete craving of mind.
Can we say that when we're talking about, when we refer to vipassana meditation, it is bhavana that the Buddha taught about? And can we say that bhavana, no matter we are referring to samatha or vipassana, bhavana means the development of understanding. Is that correct? And can we say that that understanding, the development of understanding or bhavana, as Ajahn referred to earlier, has to begin with pariyatti, which conditions patipatti, and which leads to patibheda. And so, beginning with pariyatti, pariyatti has to be the wise considering of dhammas as anatta, as we're discussing now, because someone may think of going to a special place or sitting quietly, but if there's no considering of dhammas now, then there cannot be the beginning of understanding about them. Is this correct? Would you say?
I think for the beginners, the most important thing is to understand what Buddha taught about whatever appears now, because his words must be different from any other words, because he was the enlightened one. So each word represents realities right now, which is very subtle. Just talking about the anicchang, dukkhang, anatta, it's impossible to experience it right now without more and more understanding, to have the moment of becoming detached from taking, seeing and all dhammas as not self as before. That's why it needs pariyatti, to study the words of the Buddha, not just to hear or to read, but to really understand the reality which each of his words represents. For example, seeing right now, we don't think of the whole body, don't think of the name, don't think of our friend or place, but that which now sees, only that. Just a characteristic of a reality at a time, to learn more to see that it is not I, no one can take it for I, or it does not belong to anyone, because it arises and falls away in split second, never to arise again. So how can it belong to anyone? And life consists of one moment at a time, one citta experiences an object at a time. If there is no citta, there is no living being at all. That's why no matter we call this shape human being or that shape bird or whatever, realities are realities. Seeing is seeing. So at moment of understanding, seeing, there is no idea about bird or cat or human being or I, because it's just a conditioned realities. And no one can stop its arising at all, because the citta has its own qualification of paccaya to condition the next citta to arise as soon as it has fallen away. That's why citta arises from the first moment in life and falls away in succession up to this moment, and on to tomorrow, and so on. That's why no understanding of realities as no self, there is always the idea of I see, I hear, I think all the time. So just one word like anicca, impermanency, not permanent. It means that there can be, in the beginning, the intellectual understanding of its characteristic, to learn to understand that no one can condition its arising to arise, no one can stop its falling away, because it arises and falls away by conditions. Anything right now, if we know, we can find out that there are different realities, no one at all. Talking about seeing, seeing is seeing, no one. Hearing, hearing is hearing, no one. Thinking, thinking is a reality, no one. Hardness is hardness, no one, nothing in it at all. That's why Buddha enlightened the truth of all realities to understand clearly, permanently, that there's no self. Each reality is conditioned to arise, not at anyone's will, and it falls away, even right now. So the only way to understand realities as they are, not by the self, is trying so hard to understand it. It's impossible, because understanding is a reality. It is no one. It's not under anyone's control. Without right conditions, without listening carefully to the teachings, it's impossible for right understanding to develop to the degree that it appears as just a reality. So the meaning of vipassana is clear comprehension of whatever appears, just only one at a time. Otherwise one cannot say that it's clear. For example, now there is seeing, hearing, thinking. So how can any of them be clear to right understanding as not self? That's why by learning more, panya develops more. There is some level of detachment from taking realities for self, even at the level of intellectual understanding. Otherwise, there cannot be conditions for right awareness of the Eightfold Path together with the right understanding arise. We just call reality by names, sammasati. But what is sati? It's not citta, it's not memory, it's not feeling. But now, does sati appear? If sati does not appear, but we know that at any moment when kusala cittas arise, there's no one there, only wholesome cetasikas arise together with citta. And without understanding, there is the idea of my kusala, or at that moment I'm good. But actually, without those realities which are the wholesome cetasikas and citta, how can there be good person or wholesome moment? That's why it's not a matter of trying so hard by the idea of self to enlighten the nature of reality which now arises and falls away in split second. But it's the development of panya which can understand, different level of understanding. The intellectual level is not the direct understanding, which is patipatti, because the Pali word patipatti means approaching or reaching, attaining the characteristic which appears with right understanding, clear comprehension. Patti, patti. As I have heard, patti is a particular reality, and patti is to reach or to attain the understanding of that reality which appears. And now, no one can experience any reality at one at a time at all, because the succession of the arising and falling away of realities are so very, very fast, in split second. Both mental realities and rupa, that which cannot experience. No one knows that now what appears as a lady or a gentleman, a monk sitting here, is only the succession of the arising and falling away of a reality which can be seen. So we can see the great virtues of the Buddha's wisdom. He enlightened the truth that never change, what you call it. Nobody can change the characteristic, can make it in a different way, because citta arises and falls away, and rupa also arises and falls away. But the lifespan of rupa is longer than citta, because it takes 17 moments of citta arising and falling away for a rupa to arise and fall away. But now, see, the sound appears, but so many, many moments of hearing in between moments of seeing, in split seconds. That's why that really cannot be easily, directly experienced as it is, but from learning to understand firmer and firmer about realities, more and more confidence, which is pariyatti, to be satchayana. Because not only pariyatti, patipatti, and pativeda, because usually pariyatti means listening to the words of the Buddha, but not just listening, contemplating, considering, until the right understanding can understand that it has to be such and such according to his teachings. And this is not satchayana yet. If there is no understanding that only this moment can be penetrated to understand its nature which arises and falls away, not other moment, because other moment, the previous one has gone completely, there can never be the penetration of the truth of that which hasn't gone completely, never arise again. And that which hasn't arisen yet, how can there be the expectation which one, which reality will arise, will appear to be object of sati, because there are many conditions for many realities to arise. Now, many, many, so many. So all depends on the anattaness, everything. Even conditions for the direct awareness to understand directly a characteristic which now appears. Otherwise it's gone. All conditioned realities are gone. And they are all gone all the time. Only when right awareness arises and is aware of a particular one, then right understanding develops to understand the anattaness, that characteristic which appear different from this moment, for sure.
Can we have anything called a reality?
Not called, it's a reality. No need we call it reality or not. It's a reality, it's real, because it's real.
Okay. So I'm sitting here and listening to you. Is that the reality?
What is real at this moment? Seeing is real. Hearing is real. Thinking is real. Hardness is real. It has its own characteristic of anatta. No one in it. No I who am sitting.
So when there is no I,
there are realities.
Is there reality?
No. If there is no realities, how can there be the idea of I? If there is no seeing, can there be the idea of I see? At moment of hearing, if there is no hearing, can there be the idea of I hear? But since hearing arises, falls away unknowingly, and when the wrong understanding takes it for I all the time, that's why in Pali the words upadana khanda, all five khandas, it means all dhammas are object of clinging, taking for someone or I.
Concept of I.
If there is no reality, there is no I, for sure there is no world at all. If nothing arises at all.
Wouldn't it be more correct to say that the concept of I is based on realities rather than realities are based on concept of I?
What do you mean by reality?
Good question.
So at this moment of listening to Ajahn, at the moment of hearing, what is heard now?
Not what you hear.
Not to, what do I hear, but what at a moment of hearing, what is heard?
There's a question.
That's a question at this moment. At moment of hearing, what is heard?
What is it, the object? Yeah, what is the object of hearing?
I can't think of an object because there is no eye to hear.
I'll ask you because of your interest in rupas, which is what is heard at this moment?
Sound.
Sound. Only sound. We think we hear Ajahn speaking about Dharma, but at a moment of hearing, only sound is heard. Hearing is real. Sound is real. And at a moment of hearing sound, what also arises with hearing? What is hearing accompanied by?
Sound.
Hearing hears sound. And at the moment of hearing sound, the hearing must be accompanied by sanya, memory, pasa, which contacts the sound, seven chetasikas. And at that moment of hearing sound, the hearing cannot be changed to any other dharma. The sound cannot be heard. There cannot be any other dharma. But the hearing falls away instantly, and a few more chittas experience the sound, and afterwards there is thinking about, I can hear Ajahn talking about Dharma and many other ideas. But at the moment of hearing, only sound is heard. This is a reality. And so actually the Buddha taught that understanding Dharma means learning to live alone with one experience of reality at a time, because only one reality is experienced at a time. At a moment of hearing sound, no visible object is seen, no odor is smelt, no hardness is touched. There is just the world, one world at a time, the hearing of sound. No one there, nothing in it. No voice, no Dharma talk, just sound. But because of sanya and other mental factors, afterwards thinking is conditioned, thinking in this way or that way because of various tendencies. So coming back to this moment and knowing that actually just sound is heard, nothing else, this is the way to understand what is Dharma. Just a conditioned reality that arises no thing in it, no voice in it, just sound for an instant that is heard.
So when there was a loud sound heard, it seems that there can be seeing at the same time as hearing, but we learn from the Abhidhamma only one citta at a time, experience one object through one doorway at a time. And when there is more understanding of this, this helps us to know what is Dhamma or what is Paramatta Dhamma and not the concept, different from a concept we may be thinking about. So what is life? It is only the experiencing of one object at a time, through one doorway at a time, and it is all gone immediately.
So the I that you are talking about is an idea, right? Just thinking. There's no Dhamma that is I. Dhammas arise and fall away all the time, regardless of any thinking about I or not. Would that be right?
Yes.
Seeing and hearing and thinking, tasting, touching, and so on, happening all the time. For the person who has the idea of I and for the person who doesn't have the idea of I.
Yes, it's very difficult to conceive these hearing, seeing, things like that when you are. You have to say that there is no I who does all these things.
The difficulty is thinking that the I has to be removed, because the seeing and hearing are appearing now. We don't have to conceive them. They are appearing, they are arising, they are real, they can be directly experienced. Even if we have the idea it's me who is seeing, but still when we hear the Buddha's explanation, we can appreciate that the reason there is seeing is not because there's the idea of I. The reason there is seeing and visible object is because they are dhammas that arise by their own conditions, regardless of any idea of I.
And I think it helps to remember there are only experiences through six doorways. Now we're not talking about Bhavanga cittas that don't experience through any doorway. But if they are not moments of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, or through the body door, then it is almost all the time thinking about concepts, thinking about eyes, thinking about I can see, I can hear, I can taste, and so on.
What we are doing now actually is pariyatti, because we speak about realities that can be experienced now. Pariyatti is not a theoretical understanding. And pariyatti by itself can condition later on patipatti. And Acha spoke about it should be firm first, with confidence in the teachings that it is about realities now. And when it is more firm, only then it's called satchanyana, because it can condition patipatti, or the direct awareness and understanding of different realities one at a time. But now we think of a self, our I, who can coordinate all experience through the six doors, but it doesn't exist. It's only citta, cetasika, and rupa, but no I, no self at all. It's only a thought. We think about it.
I or the we into it, isn't it?
In what sense?
No, we were just saying all about what we think.
Yes, conventional way of expressing.
Yeah.
Yes, but still we are talking about dhammas.
This is what Ajahn was saying at the very beginning. It's not actually the matter of the words or the language or the details, but the understanding. So the language in the suttas is different from the language in the Abhidhamma. And the Buddha used conventional terms. He talked about Ananda and Sariputta and I. But no matter the language, the teachings are all pointing to the understanding of realities, paramattha dharmas.
We have time for two more questions. Sisters, do you have a question?
May I ask? Ask.
Maybe I would like to ask you something.
May I ask?
Yes.
Yeah. Is there avijja now?
Question. Is there avijja, ignorance, right now happening at this moment?
Yes.
Answer. There's a lot of it.
A lot. One answer.
Avijja cannot understand whatever appears at all. But from hearing, not the avijja, but right understanding begins to grow little by little. So what can experience the arising and falling of reality right now? What reality can experience the nature of reality right now, which arises and falls away? Can it be directly experienced? What we are talking about?
Not the gross necessarily, not the subtle level, but grossly some fiction.
Yeah, but what? What reality can experience?
Like we are sitting here, hearing as you are repeating again and again, again and again, seeing, hearing. This sound we can experience, that I can see you, that your mouth is moving, the matter is moving, I can experience that. I know that this is the matter, it's your body, this is Nina Gorkhan, I can say that, this is the reality.
So it's not the understanding of that which can be seen and that which is thought about.
Sorry?
That which can be seen and that which is thought about.
I'm not clear.
Well, Ajahn's about to explain. You gave an answer, and Ajahn is beginning to explain that your answer encompassed two different things. One is what is seen, and the other is what is thought about. Because you cannot know Nina van Gorkum without thinking about her name. And you cannot know the person's mouth is moving without thinking about what has been seen moments before.
We do think.
Yeah, that's the point.
Because of the thinking. Because of the thinking, I can say that her mouth is moving.
So what is the reality that arises that is thought about? What is the reality that is experienced? That is thought about.
My concentration. Okay, I can't say that exactly from the Abhidhamma point of view, but with my little understanding, I would like to say, I'm looking at her, my eyes looking at her mouth, and I can hear the sound, and I can see that her mouth is moving. That's how I experience her mouth is moving.
So this is a story about what is happening.
Yeah, that's what I'm experiencing.
What about the moment of seeing itself?
The moment of when I'm hearing her, sometimes, like, I'm thinking. Like, when she said the hearing, I'm thinking, what is that, the hearing? When I can see, at the time, sometimes I'm thinking what I could see. That's how I'm experiencing.
So, are we aware of the hearing or just thinking about what has been heard?
Sometimes
because we know,
I'm aware.
We know the meaning of the words instantly, and yet that meaning cannot be understood without thinking.
Yeah. Okay, when I'm really hearing at the time, I really can't see her even. When I see her, exactly when I can't see. When I see her, I can't hear her. When I see her, I can't hear, but when I'm hearing, I can't see her. Exactly moment, sometimes, subtly, sometimes I can experience that myself.
The teaching of the Buddha is just about reality, absolute reality, so true. So at this moment, you see Kunina, right?
Yes.
Close your eyes, please.
Yeah, it's still is there, like pictures is there.
But not as soon like when you see it like this, because that which can be seen is only a reality, not more than that. One reality that can be seen is that which now appears at moment of seeing, no one in it. Because they can be thinking about Kunena without seeing, but it's not like at moment of seeing, because seeing cannot see anyone at all. What it can see is only that which can impinge on the eye base and falls away. That's all, no one in it, because it has fallen away completely. And this is the absolute truth.
Can I just add? I think there was a French philosopher who said, "Cogito ergo sum." I think, therefore I am. Is that a reality?
Can it be understood right now? The teachings of the Buddha can be understood at any time, so we don't mind about the other's words.
But that is not accepted in Buddhism, isn't it? I think, therefore I am, because we are all talking about an I, this whole setup.
When we are saying I or thinking, I think, therefore I am, what is the reality of that moment?
That moment.
Yes. What is the reality of that moment?
He's thinking.
He's thinking, exactly. So thinking is real. But
so what can they really experience the arising and falling away of reality right now, as Buddha said? What can?
The question.
Yes,
please. What can experience the realities as the Buddha is taught? Can we?
What?
Yeah. Can we? Okay, like we are experiencing, as she said, okay, close your eyes. Is this the same, the Nina Gurkhan you have seen? When I close my eyes, it's not really. I see her really very white colors, but when I close my eyes, sometimes I see the dark Nina Gurkhan. Yeah, that's how what I'm experiencing. So that is how we can experience the teachings of the Buddha.
So in other words, and the question was, what can understand the arising and falling away of realities? Because at the moment now, we learn it's so difficult for there to be even understanding of what is seen, visible object, because usually we think we see a person or a mouth moving. Actually, what is seen is just that which is seen. No mouth moving, no Mrs. Van Gorkum, no black and red, just that which is seen. If there is not the understanding of realities like seeing, visible object, hearing sound, as we've been discussing, these different realities as just a Dhamma, then there is no way that the highly developed understanding can understand the arising and falling away of realities at this moment. So all the Buddha's teachings, the path, the pre-path, it's all about the development of understanding from the beginning, like beginning now to consider what exactly is seen. This is the beginning of understanding that will lead to more developed understanding.
I think this was the cryptic message that Buddha gave Balia.
Exactly. The seeing, there's just the scene. And for Bahaya at that time, just a few words were enough because of the accumulations of great understanding in the past. But for us, even if we hear that in the scene there is just the scene, just that which appears. It's not enough. Sariputta could just listen to a couple of lines, it was enough. But for us, because there is so much ignorance, we have to hear and consider and study a lot. Even if we hear about the details of the khandhas, it's not enough. We have to hear about the dhatus, about the ayatanas, about the details of the kalapas, about bhavangachittas, otherwise we may wonder what arises when we're fast asleep. So the reason that we need to study more and learn more about 28 rupas or so on is just in order to understand with confidence at this moment that what is seen is just the seen, what is heard is just the heard, to understand more about reality appearing at this moment as no one involved, no I at all.
So Ajahn often says there is no one there, because when we think that we see a person, it's really not seeing but thinking of people, and we confuse the paramatta satya and the samuti satya, the conventional world, but that's not the real world, because in reality, as Ajahn often says, we are all alone, because seeing arises, it's no person, it's just seeing or hearing. We are alone.
I think we can call it a good morning discussion. And on behalf of the audience, I would like to thank our learned teachers and assistants for your generosity of sharing knowledge with us. And also I would like to thank the participants for their engagement. And I find that there's still many things that remain unsolved in everyone's face. And I think it is exactly why we need to keep dwelling and discussing until to gain some understanding for ourselves. So I hope to meet you here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow and on Friday.